It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. This year, the Illinois Innocence Project is marking its 15th anniversary. In January, the program helped win freedom for Tashomi Campbell. He'd been convicted of murdering someone in Champaign back in 1997 and spent more than 18 years in prison. Joining us to talk about the past, present, and future of the Illinois Innocence Project is its executive and legal director, John Hanlon. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Brian.
So the Illinois Innocence Project has been around for 15 years now. It began life as the Downstate Innocence Project. How have things changed over the past 15 years?
The project has grown not only in terms of its resources, but also its mission. In 2001, Dr. Larry Golden, Dr. Nancy Ford, both professors at UIS, and a Springfield investigator, Bill Clutter, got together and answered the call from the Innocence Project in New York, which had made it known nationwide that they couldn't do all the innocence work that was coming to their attention, that they needed help, and that local universities, law schools, public defender offices, private law firms should heed this call and should start to take on some of these cases because New York simply could not do them all. So Dr. Golden, Dr. Ford, and Bill Clutter started the Downstate Illinois Innocence Project. There was one student at the time. Now, this past semester, we had 20 students involved in our office. We have a staff of 4 full-time attorneys and a 1/3 time attorney. Two of those attorneys are in Chicago. We are about to open a Chicago office, which is purely pro bono, with space that's been donated by a caring lawyer in Chicago, and we're very grateful to any lawyers who make the contributions. Again, as I said, kind of give back to the system that from where they have hopefully done well.
You've gotten thousands of applications, and yet you certainly don't have the resources to handle thousands of cases. So how do you choose?
Well, we look for red flags when in choosing what cases to work on. And the red flags are pertain to those areas which have been consistently identified as problem areas in terms of leading to wrongful convictions. And those include false confessions, eyewitness misidentification, the prosecution's use of a jailhouse snitch, and a real growing area is that of what we might call junk science. People often think that science can solve all cases. It's what they call in the courthouse right now the CSI effect. People watch a show, and the show is all wrapped up in an hour with some purple light having resolved the case. And that leads sometimes to science that is not really science being introduced in courtrooms. It's a real concern. It's come to the attention of those of us in the innocence movement in the last several years, and it's a real problem that we hope is going to be addressed in the future by this state and other states.
It sounds like you are really looking for people who maybe were truly wrongfully convicted, and I wonder, how do you differentiate? Because the courts and the law make a distinction between somebody who maybe there were just mistakes at the trial, but maybe they were probably still, you know, guilty in the moral sense versus somebody who is actually innocent.
The search is for cases of actual innocence. We do not work on cases where there was a so-called technical error or where there was some other flaw in the proceeding, but the person is still guilty of having committed the act or acts which constituted the crime. We do not want those cases. Those cases are for a lawyer, a defense lawyer who represents that person to work on. Innocence projects, including ours, want cases where they got the wrong guy or where, in some cases, no crime has occurred. A fire that is blamed to be an arson, for example, or a child who falls and is injured and or killed, and there's a blame that is assessed to someone for having done something wrong to the child. No crime cases are actually a very growing area of exonerations in this country. So yes, we only will take cases of actual innocence where they have the wrong person.
Do you ever worry that you have helped free a guilty person?
I don't worry about that. I don't think that Innocence Projects in general worry about that. And there's a lot of reasons for that. First of all, many of the exonerations are based on DNA. What we know from the 2009 National Academy of Sciences report is that the only true science that comes out of a lab is DNA. All other areas of forensics are lacking in terms of their scientific validity. So DNA has exonerated, according to the Innocence Project in New York, has exonerated about 360 individuals. And so DNA applies to many, many of the exonerations, and that's about as certain as anything can be. And in many of those cases, then, the DNA has gone on to not only show that person's innocence, but then show who did it. There's, of course, a database of DNA profiles. And hopefully, in most of these cases, a match can then be made to the person who actually committed the offense. In cases where DNA is not available, it's very difficult to convince a judge. The standard is very, very high. If your case is based on investigation, and you know, or in some cases, recantations or new witnesses coming forward, witnesses who should have been brought to a trial but who weren't brought to a trial. The standard is very high. No judge is going to cut a person loose in post-conviction unless there is absolute certainty that a mistake was made. And this is about mistakes. This the innocence movement is about mistakes. And I challenge people to name a discipline, a system, a profession that is unflawed, where no mistakes occur. We know that it happens every day in medicine and in every field that we can think of. And to think that the criminal justice system would be perfect and not make any mistakes is just not realistic. And again, DNA has shown that very clearly.
It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with John Hanlon, director of the Illinois Innocence Project, which is part of the University of Illinois Springfield. Well, you mentioned a little earlier witnesses who should have been brought to a trial, and I'd like to talk now a little bit about Tashomi Campbell's case. How did he come to be represented by the project?
Mr. Campbell wrote to us some years ago, prior to 2011, and informed us that, first of all, he very clearly, very consistently, as he has throughout, claimed that he was actually innocent, had nothing to do with the murder that occurred in Champaign County all those years ago, 18 years ago now. And he wrote and asked for assistance. He told us then, he said, that there were witnesses who should have been called. If an investigation had been done by my lawyer at the time, those witnesses would have shown that the state's key witnesses were lying. This was one of those cases where there was not DNA or any other kind of forensics to help. This was just three people on the street who testified that Mr. Campbell was involved in this altercation that ultimately led to the death of one person. And ultimately, not only did those three people themselves recant, but three other people indeed came forward and testified that they saw what had happened and that Tashomi Campbell had absolutely nothing to do with it. Very significantly, when the case went into federal court, again, it's difficult to get habeas corpus relief in federal court. It is very, very difficult.
We learn in civics class that the courts are supposed to be a check on the power of the state, but Mr. Campbell was turned down repeatedly in state court at all levels, up to the Illinois Supreme Court multiple times, and even by a federal trial judge, at least at his first attempt there. I guess, is that typical of your clients, and how did that resolve itself in this case?
The Illinois court system really failed Mr. Campbell. The evidence that was brought to the attention of the state courts was, by and large, I'll just say very similar to that which was ultimately brought to the attention of the federal courts. The system failed him in Illinois. When he got really good representation in the federal courts from a wonderful law firm of Perkins Coie from Madison, Wisconsin, to whom we just recently gave a Defender of the Innocent Award at our recent event. They provided fantastic representation, something that lawyers and law firms should do, is give back a little bit, and they did. And they put on a hearing. We were involved in finding certain of the witnesses that ended up being crucial. And the Seventh Circuit Appellate Court in Chicago ultimately found that there was a travesty of justice, that he had received ineffective assistance of his trial counsel because that trial counsel engaged in essentially no strategy by failing to go out and interview the witnesses. It's pretty basic. If you're a lawyer, you go out and you interview the witnesses, or you have an investigator do it, but have somebody do it. His strategy, as the court discussed in its opinion, was a failure. And then the federal trial level judge ultimately held a hearing and implemented the decision of the Seventh Circuit, and Mr. Campbell was awarded a new trial. And then very significantly, the state's attorney of Champaign County looked at the case and realized that there was no evidence. There just was no evidence that Mr. Campbell had played any role in this very sad offense. And so she dismissed the case outright, vacated the convictions, dismissed the case outright, and made it possible for him to walk out of prison the next day.
Campbell's case was resolved years after his conviction, which is pretty much the way the Illinois Innocence Project has made its mark on the law over the past 15 years. But now you're looking to get into the arena where policy is made. Why?
You know, when we get an exoneration, Christopher Abernathy last year, 29 years later, Angel Gonzalez, 21 years later, Toshomi Campbell, 17 years later. These are all on the back end. These are trying to make the best and undo tragedies that have already occurred. Policy is very important because there are things that can be done on the front end that can prevent these things from happening in the first place. And innocence projects nationwide are recognizing that policy is just very important. How a lineup or a photo array is conducted is important. Videotaping interrogations is important. Certain discovery measures being implemented is very important, and a whole host of others. But it's something that we intend to continue to pursue. And my pet project is going to be seeking a forensic sciences commission for this state. Illinois is one of the top three states in the country in a dubious manner, and that is of convicting its own citizens wrongfully. Texas, New York, and Illinois. Texas and New York both have forensic sciences commissions. Illinois does not. And it's time that we had one to examine some of the areas of junk science.
What would that do?
It depends which one it would model. But the idea would be to have, science is supposed to be objective. And the idea of a forensic sciences commission would be to have whatever the appropriate number is, I don't know, 10, 12, 18 individuals who are objective about research and the latest knowledge as to areas of forensics that are still being introduced in our courtrooms, study those areas, and then make recommendations to the attention of trial judges, to the attention of legislators, but also review specific testimony that is being given in courtrooms by certain so-called experts in various areas of forensics, and to say this kind of testimony is based on outdated, non-scientific information, and it's time that we came into the 21st century in all of these areas.
Well, John Hanlon, thank you for speaking with us.
You're very welcome.
John Hanlon is director of the Illinois Innocence Project, which is based at the Springfield campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey.